Welcome to episode 110 of the Frontside podcast. My name is Sam Keithley. I'm a developer here at the Frontside, and I will be your episode host. Today we're here with Saran Gitbarek discussing mentoring. She is the founder of Code Newbie and the host of the Code Newbie podcast. And also with me as a co-host is Charles Lull, who is also a developer at Frontside. So welcome, Saran, and welcome, Charles. How are you guys doing?
Thanks for having me. Doing pretty well.
Hello.
So today, it's going to be kind of an interesting take on the mentoring talk. I mostly want to know, first off, Saran, how do you feel about mentoring? What are your opinions on the mentor-mentee relationship or the value there?
Yeah, I have lots of opinions on this topic. I think that the traditional structure of mentorship, which usually looks like someone with less experience going to someone who has a lot more experience and saying, hey, will you be my mentor? Kind of like that that children's book, you know, Are You My Mother? like, are you my mentor? And then that person, that mother figure, that mentor, you know, kind of looks after them and then checks in on them, and they have regular, you know, coffees and lunches and kind of, you know, steers them in the right, usually career-related direction. I don't think that's very realistic, to be honest. And, you know, I think about why that might be, and there's many different reasons. I think the fact that we're so networked, and there's just so many different ways to get in contact with people and build relationships is a big reason. But I think that that traditional mentorship model of that kind of one-directional way of doing things is just not really needed and kind of overrated. I think that mentorship nowadays looks more like a mutually beneficial relationship where I might reach out to someone who has more experience than me, for example, in drawing, you know, in art, and that's something I want to get into. But I know a crap ton about podcasting. So, you know, I help you. You're my mentor in this specific area and this specific topic. But then I kind of get to be a mentor in this other thing that I'm really good at. And I think it's those types of very focused, topic-oriented, ideally two-way relationships that are a more accurate and, frankly, a more effective way of doing mentorship.
Yeah, I actually agree with that. So I am pretty new myself to development. Only really been in this career for about a year now. And I always kind of consider that mentoring relationship as kind of a regression back to like school days where you have this somebody's considered superior over you in some way when that's really not true. Like in this community of developers, and no matter where you are in development, it's all about like working together and pairing. And, you know, working here has really like showed me that value in pairing rather than like I have to look up to someone and like kind of regress back to like feeling like a teenager in high school. You know, this person's so good at this thing and they're the only one who can teach me. So I definitely share that view of mentoring. I went to a boot camp, and when they were telling you like, oh, you got to find a mentor, I was like, well, but why can't we just like work together?
Yeah, and it's also a huge responsibility, a huge burden on the mentor too, you know? I mean, having to be, you know, in a lot of ways responsible for someone's career and trajectory and, you know, direction. Like that's a big responsibility. We don't have time for that, you know?
Yeah.
So on both ends, whether it's feeling like, you know, you're back in school or feeling like you have this huge responsibility, I think it's the traditional model isn't really the best model for either party, you know? And I think this idea of let's all learn together, let's be really focused on topics and problems that are like very particular to what I'm doing, what I'm learning, what I'm trying to do. I think that works out. It feels healthier for both people.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I wonder if also too, it seems like it might be a little bit of a throwback to the days when people would spend 30 years at a single company.
Yes.
Or 30 years, 35 years in a single career, where they're really, you know, you have these people who are really these reservoirs of, you know, this intense tribal knowledge. And as people are, you know, it seems like, you know, people move around a lot more in their careers, not only in the company that they work for, but also in just the things that they're literally doing. I might be podcasting one day and like producing a bunch of content, and then I might move into music or, you know, writing or other things like that. Is that kind of, you know, the careers seem to be broken apart a little bit more if that kind of is one of the reasons why older models of advancement in those careers might not be as good a fit as they once were.
Yep, absolutely. And especially, you know, I'm obviously very biased because I'm in tech, but when you think about the different roles that people have in tech, I feel like we're always wearing so many different hats, you know, like we have to obviously code and be technical in that sense, but we have to be really good communicators. A lot of us are speakers. We host podcasts. We organize conferences. We go to meetups. You know what I mean? We're bloggers. We do so many other things that this idea of, you know, I'm going to have a mentor who can help me in my role of being a developer is just too big. You know, you kind of need people who are good at those individual pieces and those individual skills to get me to where I want to go.
The whole idea of mentoring to me always reminded me of like that whole Mr. Miyagi relationship where like you have this master of something and you're trying to learn from them. But in software development, I've learned that really no one is a master of anything because it's just so much, it's just changing so much and everything is so different.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like, so, you know, as the question is, obviously, it seems like the idea that you're going to find one person who's going to, you know, represent kind of the ideal confluence of every single skill set that they, you know, that you could hope to want to be at some point in your career. That seems like that's looking more and more ludicrous. So is there a model where you can try and distribute those things where you single out a large range of individuals? I guess that's kind of what you were hinting at the beginning is, you know, that it is, you know, a lot more broken up, a lot more distributed, but how do you pursue that even if it is in a distributed manner?
Yeah, that's a great question. One of the moments where I realized that the distributed model is really the only way that makes sense is, I think it was 3 years ago, maybe, we thought about doing some type of mentorship program at CodeNewbie, some type of way for people to, you know, to link up and find people who can, you know, be their guide in a way. And we had people fill out this survey that basically said, you know, what do you want out of a mentor? You know, what do you look for? What do you hope to achieve? But also asked, how do you see yourself? So do you see yourself as a mentor, a mentee, or both? And it was really surprising that most people checked off both, which I thought was just so interesting. It was so interesting to me that the same people who said, you know, I need help were the same people who also said, I also have help to give. And to me, that was just such an amazing moment because I said, wow, it really isn't about this idea of, you know, I am the guide and I'm going to guide you. It's really about, yes, I have information and expertise in one area and not in others. And so what I realized is there really isn't a mentor model. I think it's more of a culture of being helpful, which probably sounds really cheesy, but it's true. You know, like I really think it's about saying, I know how to do a thing. I'm going to go on Stack Overflow and answer questions. I'm going to go on Twitter and answer questions. I'm going to, you know, write blog posts and share with the world. I think the real model, the real distributed mentoring model is us as individuals saying, I just learned how to do a thing, or I just figured out how to do a thing well. Let me capture that. Let me capture it in a response, in an answer, in a forum, in a post, and let me share that. And the more we do that as individuals, the more we have this huge, amazing aggregate of knowledge that can serve as mentorship for all of us.
To like touch on that, that's kind of the idea behind CodeLand, right? Where everybody's just sort of CodeLand, the conference, that, you know, everybody's sort of, while they might be more new to development, everybody's just sharing their knowledge. Because like, you might feel you're really new at it, but you know a lot more than you think you do. And you could still help.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, and that's the whole idea with even the Twitter chats. You know, when we first started, it was, I don't have all the answers. I don't claim to. I don't really want that responsibility. But I know there are a lot of people who do. And I know a lot of people who have resources and opinions and who can help out. So one thing that people do is they'll DM us and say, like, hey, I'm having a hard time with this. Sometimes it's a very technical problem. Sometimes it's a general, you know, I'm having a hard time getting a job. What should I do? Type of like high level question. And I never answer them. I always say, tweet us and we'll retweet it and we'll get the whole community involved and we could have a rich conversation around it. And that's really been our motto, our philosophy is that, you know, there isn't, and that's the other thing too with mentorship, right? If you have a mentor, you're not obligated, I guess, to listen to them. But the idea is kind of that you should, you know, there's this one person and you kind of should listen to them because they know more than you. And I think that that's just not really fair. And instead, I like to think that there are lots of different ways to do things. And it's up to you to decide what's best for you. And in order for you to decide, you have to have a lot of options. So with Kovan, with the Twitter chats saying, hey, no matter what skill level you're at, no matter what, you know, how confident you feel in your coding abilities, you do have something to offer. Let's pull that out. Let's put it on the table and let's see who you can help today.
Yeah, I think that's a perfect way of introducing someone to the idea of like helping or like getting help from a community rather than an individual. Because you never want to take one person's word as gospel on mm-hmm. something you just know nothing about.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's exactly. Like, yeah. You can sound confident talking about something and it can be the total wrong answer. But if you're seen as someone superior or someone who knows what they're doing,
you can sell it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. You can be the best snake oil salesman in the world.
Absolutely. And that's actually, so for the Code Newbie podcast, we do short questions we do at the end of each episode. And one of the questions, my favorite question is, what's the worst advice you've ever received? And I love that question because, you know, I started by saying, I think that people love giving advice. I think people love asking for advice. And the assumption, again, is if I give you advice, then I probably know more and you should probably listen to me, but that's not always true. And I want people to be comfortable making their own decisions and deciding for themselves, hey, you know, this may sound like it could work and this may sound like a good idea, generally speaking, but for me, it's probably not a good fit. It's probably not what's best for me, and to be comfortable rejecting advice. And that was kind of the reason why I started that question. It's my favorite question. And it's so interesting how much advice is good. You know, it's kind of generic, but it's good advice. It's advice like, don't quit, right? Keep going, which may be a good idea, and maybe you do need to quit, you know? So being open to rejecting advice, I think, is really important. And yeah, that's like one of my favorite questions.
In your experience, what is the best like way to reject advice? Because when you're a new developer, when you're new at anything, and you're seeking advice from a community or from a person, you don't want to come off as rude, or maybe you're feeling, I don't know, not very confident, mm-hmm. but you think the advice that you were given is just bad advice. What would your advice be, I guess? What would your advice be on this advice?
Yeah. Make sure it's a good one.
For your perspective, what would be a good advice to reject advice that you think is just wrong?
Yeah. So number one is when I ask people for advice, I try to think about and try to know up front, do they have the same values that I do? Do they have the same worldview? Do they have the same goals? Because oh, that's another thing too. Oh my God, I get so much unsolicited advice. It's amazing. It's amazing. You know, I've actually stopped, you know, kind of just saying, you know, to people my ideas and what's on my mind. Because I know as soon as I say, like, I'm thinking about this, I'll get a whole slew of unsolicited advice. And I'm like, I didn't ask for that. What I've learned is first to kind of figure out, okay, are we even on the same page? Because, you know, if my goal is to be a developer, your goal is to be the only thing I could think of is a juggler. I don't know why. But if your goal is to be a juggler and I'm asking you for, you know, career advice, I'm going to go ahead and safely assume that what you have to say is probably not as applicable to me. And so number one is kind of identifying that. But number two is if they say something that just, you know, I know is not going to work or I've already tried, I'll just nod and say thank you very much and kind of go about my day. I don't think you have to declare whether or not you're going to take it. I think just acknowledging. And at the end of the day, when people give you advice, I think they're trying to be helpful, right? Like they have good intentions usually. Right. Usually it's a, you know, I'm trying to save you from making mistakes that I made. And, you know, I'm trying to help you get there a little bit faster. So I always appreciate it. But knowing that I can say, you know, thank you for your time, thank you for your perspective, but know that I don't have to go off and implement it.
Yeah, that's actually pretty similar to my tactic. Just nod like, yeah, thank you. Thank you so much. Don't talk to me ever again. No.
Disappear. Yeah.
Yeah. Gone like the wind. So with this like pressure that either new developers or seasoned veterans are feeling about the mentor relationship, because I feel like a lot of senior developers that I've spoken with or people who have been in the business for a long time feel like they should be mentoring or they need to take on that responsibility. But there's always that like hint of dread in their voice when they say that, like, oh, I should be doing this, but I always feel like it's okay to not do that. Like, I never really understood why it was so high value to have this one-on-one relationship with an individual. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're not in school, because it just feels so, like, not childish, but childish.
Yeah, that's one of the things, frankly, that I love about the tech community and also do not understand about the tech community is it's such a giving, knowledge sharing community, whether you do it in a tactful way or a not so tactful way. But the idea of, you know, like giving back and paying it forward is just so deep. You know, it's so, so deep that even when I'd been coding for only a couple months, I still felt this, I wouldn't call it pressure because pressure kind of sounds a little negative, but I definitely felt this expectation that I was supposed to be blogging, supposed to be sharing and shouting and helping and, you know, doing these pay it forward type things. And I don't really know where that comes from. Maybe that comes from just, you know, the culture of open source. Maybe that's where it, you know, kind of penetrated. I'm not sure. But there's this, huge need, desire, you know, idea that we're supposed to be giving back. And for that, I am very, very, very grateful. But I think that acknowledging that if you're someone who wants to be a mentor, that you can do it simply by being available, literally being available. The CodeNubi hashtag is super, super active, even when we're not doing our Twitter chats. And people use it to ask for help. They use it to ask questions. So, you know, if you're feeling particularly, you know, giving or, you know, extra helpful that day, go on Twitter and check the hashtag and see what questions people are asking. Things like that are just super helpful and don't require a huge amount of time and effort. So there's a lot of like small ways to help out that may not seem like a big deal to you, but for the person who's asking for help, who's been banging their head against the wall, it's hugely valuable.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, up until I went to my first conference this year, I didn't realize how like supportive and important Twitter is. I always kind of considered it to be like, it's just another social media platform that I don't understand because I'm 84 years old and I just don't get it. it's been so uniquely helpful in ways that like Stack Overflow or even like issues in GitHub just aren't. You can get so many more perspectives, so many different perspectives from people.
Absolutely. Yeah, Twitter has been amazing exactly for that. It's just, it's such an efficient way to crowdsource opinions and crowdsource perspectives and just, you know, and it's like when you get your question answered and someone else answers it, it doesn't only benefit you the way it would, you know, if you emailed someone, but it benefits anyone else who comes across that page. So yeah, it's hugely valuable.
Yeah, no, I remember the first moment I was had kind of like that light bulb went off in my head where I was working on some really weird, it was for this project that was using some strange wiki for its content storage. And I was getting frustrated and I just tweeted about it. And then like the CTO of that company just like immediately answered my question. And I was like,
oh,
what?
That's awesome. Yeah.
You know, and this is years ago. And like, yeah, no, that definitely I was like, like that was where my mind exploded.
Yeah.
I was not seeking help. I was just literally being kind of a jerk and venting frustration. And lo and behold, yeah, the answer to my problem descended from the Twitter clouds. It was incredible.
The Twitter clouds are the best clouds. Usually.
No, Twitter's very, what's the word? It's very, very split down
Moody.
The middle.
Yeah, okay, there we go.
I mean, because it's live feedback, so there's no like buffer of emotion there, you know?
Yeah.
Like, oh, this thing that you said made me mad, and I'm going to tell you about it right now.
Mm-hmm.
Charles, I know that you had mentioned before that you think mentoring like would be a good idea for Frontside. And then after all of this discussion, how like have your views stayed the same? Like, what are you feeling about that?
So it's kind of the person who's like, you know, the grizzled veteran in the software world. It's definitely something that I've kind of whipped myself over the back. It's like feeling like it's something that we should do. But I think it comes from the idea that we, you know, people come here and we want to make sure that they're getting access to the learning that they need and the ways in which they can level themselves up that they need. And that's the kind of the prime motivator there. I always perceived mentorship as some vehicle through which to achieve that. It's something that I've heard, you know, obviously we have, you know, we don't have a mentorship program at our company. It's something I felt that we should always be investigating. And I've always felt maybe a little bit bad that we didn't have it. And it's also something that I've really struggled with in my career, because I can't really say that I've ever had like a mentor. So I don't really know what that relationship would look like, but I do have a lot of people that I learned a lot of critical things from. You know, I can look at kind of these seminal moments in my career where like light bulbs went off. And a lot of the time they're associated with an individual, you know, who, and that individual and the thing that they taught me, or, you know, multiple things that they taught me, you know, are still with me. And so I have like those experiences, which have been phenomenal and critical to my development as a software developer. So I guess it's just part and parcel of that impulse that you're describing to pay it forward, to realize that when you walked into the building, the lights were on and the walls were standing and, you know, the air was at a comfortable climate temperature. And, you know, as you live there, you realize that there are people involved in actually doing that maintenance and providing the building for you and the space for you to, you know, become aware of your world. And then when new people walk into the building, you want to provide them the same experience that you had. And so I guess that's my take on it, is that's the kind of thing that I would want to provide. You know, so the question is like, what does mentoring or mentoring 3.0, you know, as we're maybe talking about in this conversation, how does that fit into that? Like, how would you implement something like this, you know, some sort of distributed learning within a company? I don't know. Maybe it's not worthwhile. Maybe it is.
Well, I mean, I think it focuses more on, you know, that pair programming, because when you're thinking back and you have all these people who, like, you have names and of people that taught you something, it's multiple names. Mm-hmm. It's not just this one guy taught me all of these things. So I'd say within a company, you know, that mentoring just comes from pairing with your coworkers, you know, seeing what different hats everybody wears and then trying them on every now and again, but not necessarily taking that individual's word as gospel, you know?
Right. Right. And hopefully that's not something that we've advocated for. But yeah, no, it's so maybe it's like, how do you introduce structure around that to say that, to make sure that, you know, the proper ferment is happening so that, you know, you mm-hmm. have novel pairings, and make sure that people, you know, the ideas that are flowing around the entire company and not just in, you know, through certain set channels.
Yeah, well, the other part of that is, you know, if you create structure around what it looks like to share outside of, because, you know, pair programming is interesting because it's one-on-one, and it's hopefully I have something important or bright to say in our pairing session. You know, maybe I don't. Maybe I'm having a dull mm-hmm. day. I'm having a bad day. But it doesn't really give you the same opportunity to take a moment and say, okay, what do I know? What do I want to share? What do I want to put together? You know, it doesn't really give you a chance to prepare, you know, and gather yourself. It's kind of in the moment. So I think having another opportunity where you can gather yourself is important. And so that might look like, you know, brown bag lunches where everyone takes a turn and has to do, you know, a little lightning talk. That gives you an opportunity to say, you know, I have 5 minutes. I'm going to share something. Everyone has a turn, which means that the company is literally saying everyone has something to say. It's only 5 minutes, only a few minutes. So hopefully it won't be too terrifying if you're not, you know, big on public speaking. And it's your coworkers. So hopefully it won't be terrifying because it's people you know and not total strangers. So, you know, like a format like that where there's structure, but the company is saying, you know, we're going to give you time to think about what you're good at and what you know and to share that is good. I think another way to do that is by setting time aside for blogging, right? If your company can say, you know, 30 minutes out of the week, we're going to take some time to, you know, to write down 5 things I learned, to write down one cool thing I learned, post it publicly, post it internally, but this expectation that everyone should be writing, everyone should be sharing, which also says everyone has something to share. So I think, you know, those are two ideas and two ways that we can create a culture of sharing and a culture of distributed mentorship where everyone has an opportunity to find the thing that they're excited about and specific ways to share it.
Yeah, that's excellent.
I mean, I hope you're grinning as much as I am, Sam, because at least in the first half, I mean, you basically described our lunch and learn process.
Mm-hmm. Oh, great. There you go. So,
it's a little bit more than 5 minutes, but I think that another thing clicked for me there is making sure that there's having it in a variation of like expectations of quality or something like that, because I feel like where we do really well is in the lunch and learn thing. We have a process very similar to what you described, but where we're not so good is maybe with blogging. And I wonder if part of that is we just hold ourselves to, you know, such a high standard of what it is. Like the idea that we could throw together a blog post in 30 minutes, I love that idea. But it means that you really have to be willing to just say, hey, you know what? We're going to get it out there and we're going to make it bite-sized. And we're not, the expectation is that we're not going to be writing some, you know, gigantic essay that's going to shake the industry to its core every every Friday at 3 o'clock. you know, there are things, and it, you know, if we can, I shouldn't say a reduction in quality, but maybe a reduction in scope, so that you can say, like, we're going to carve out 30 minutes or an hour, and we're going to pick a topic that's scoped appropriately for that.
Absolutely. And I think that knowing that you only have 30 minutes, or maybe it's an hour, you know, the hour is probably a little bit more realistic, but, you know, knowing that you only have an hour also forces scope. You can't, you know, write a book about JavaScript in an hour. You just can't. So, you know, the fact that you know that by the end of that hour, you have to have something to turn in is a great way to force people to focus and do something really small and really bite-sized. And the other thing is, you know, I don't think that after the hour you need to publish it publicly. It could be you need to turn it into someone else to edit and look over for you and give you feedback. You know, it's not quite ready yet, but it's the first, it's a solid first draft. And the idea is that after that first person edits it, then it's on its way to being published. So yeah, I think there's different ways to manage the scope without also making it this scary thing, you know, where I have to say something for the earth to shake. So there's, you know, different things that we could do around that.
Yeah. I'm wondering what other forms of sharing, like you, that we could fit into our workday. I mean, I guess just what, you know, the other baseline is just making sure that you're always, what is it, like ABT, always be tweeting. It's so easy to be write only, like just, you know, not even engaging in conversations, but just throwing ideas out into the void.
Mm-hmm.
I think holding a discussion with your coworkers, like if you're in an environment where you can work face to face, or, you know, are constantly online, if you're more of a remote worker, I think just having a conversation with anybody rather than just putting your idea out there, like putting it out there with someone who can actually provide real time feedback in a, you know, like a more friendly way than I think some people on Twitter could be, because they're your coworkers. They're not going to like call you rude names. You know,
right. And you're also going to know, hopefully, you know, the whole trust and intent and are we on the same page? Like that question is answered for, you know, without even before the text is written.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. And doing, you know, with those conversations, also doing a separate, there's something actually me and Nadia, my CTO, that we do like a show and tell every week. And the idea is that we're both always learning, you know, random things, usually related things, but sometimes totally random, but still very interesting. And we'll take, you know, 30 minutes to just share what we've learned. And sometimes those will turn into a blog post. Sometimes it's just a knowledge sharing opportunity. You know, I'm not really sure, but it's a good window of opportunity to say, we are learning and we're sharing and we have something of value to bring. And the great thing about something like a show and tell is that it doesn't necessarily have to come from my brain. You know, it doesn't have to be like, I have a great idea that I'm going to share. It can be, I read about this cool idea. It can be, I, you know, heard about this cool thing that we can try and we can implement, but I still kind of get credit, you know, like I get credit for being the value bringer, but the burden isn't on me every week to come up with the idea. So that's a nice balance, you know, to kind of create space to share and to promote this knowledge share. And if it comes from you, great. But if not, you're still helping other people.
So I have a question that may or may not be related in here that just kind of occurred to me, because this is definitely something that I experience where I get into a mode where I become like overwhelmed by the ideas that people are sharing. And so what's the balance? Because usually we're out there searching for ideas and we're searching for novel things. so that we can include them in our work and the things whether that we want to do and accomplish, whether be they in tech or elsewhere. So what's the balance of kind of being heads down and being like, you know what, I'm going to be closed to new ideas right now, right? Well, because they can be distracting, right? You can, you know, the
yeah,
next
shiny absolutely.
Syndrome is. That's actually a phenomenon. And so how do you protect yourself from sharing? What's the balance?
Yeah, my solution was to move to San Diego. That was my solution to that. I actually moved from New Jersey, right outside New York City. How long has it been? Was it only been a year? My goodness. And now I'm in San Diego. And it was so interesting because that ended up being a really nice side effect. You know, I didn't move specifically for that reason. But, you know, when you are commuting to New York City every single day, there's so much going on all the time. You know, there's just so many ideas and events and meetups and companies and people. There's just so much. And, you know, I think that it was a great place to be in my early 20s when, you know, I really just wanted to soak up everyone else's ideas and I didn't really have opinions of my own at that point. And it was a great way to just kind of absorb and be this awesome sponge in the big city. But after a while, I kind of realized maybe I have my own ideas and my own thoughts. And so moving to San Diego, which is like a much, much, much quieter place, has been a really great way to kind of reflect and, you know, sit with my own thoughts and feelings and opinions and just kind of focus on that. And so I understand that everyone can move to San Diego, although I highly recommend it. but I think, you know, in that way of carving out like a, what do they call it? Is it a tech Sabbath? A digital Sabbath? Am I saying that right?
Yeah, maybe.
I think that's what
sounds about right.
Like that. Yeah, I think I came across that term recently. But this idea of, you know, one day out of the week, I'm not going to be on the interwebs. I'm just not going to do it. You know, maybe even the whole weekend. Oh, my goodness. You know, saying I'm just going to stay away from things. And I'm just going to, you know, create a little space for me to think and reflect. I think when I don't have the whole day, when I need just like a moment, I find that writing things down is a great way, a really, really great way of doing it. Even if it's something that I would normally, you know, if I'm taking notes or if I'm doing like a strategy session or if I'm trying to make a decision, usually I'll start typing. And what I've started to do recently is to say, I'm not going to type, I'm going to pull out a notebook and I'm just going to write things down. And because writing is slower than typing, it forces you to just think, you know, it forces you to be alone with your thoughts, for better or worse. And, you know, it forces you to really just to think about what you're doing, what you're saying and reflect. And it's a really, really great meditative exercise that I found. So, you know, finding little ways to build in an escape from the noise ideally on a regular basis, I think is a really healthy thing to do.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. My normal method of sort of closing everybody off is I like to sketch out ideas because I'm an artist and I like to. So I come from that sort of perspective. Is I can make a drawing out of feelings more so than I can write them out. So like if I'm feeling really overwhelmed or if I'm trying to make sense of some information that people have given me, you know, just sketch it out. And I think that's something that doesn't really get talked about a lot in the code community because, you know, sometimes it's always about eat, breathe, live code, you know? But you have different skills. You have other things that you're good at that's not just code. When I was at React Rally, a lot of people were into music. I think finding a way to separate yourself from the entirety of it is definitely one of the better ways to make sense of your situation.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, sleep.
Sleep.
Great way to
sleep
take a break.
Sleep is so good.
It's
my
true.
Top three things, sleep.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, like when I was a kid, I never ever thought I would look forward to my bedtime ever. You know, it's my favorite part of the day. Yeah.
Yeah. But like, you know, sleep, writing, drawing, like I always forget. Like, you know, when I'm caught up in a problem, I always forget that engaging in some other activity, I like to walk in kind of the place next to my house. I like to play my ukulele. Like engaging in those activities is almost on the critical path to solving the problem. And I always forget it. And I think we always forget it. But that, you know, sometimes you can be so frustrated and you can, you know, just kind of just shut it off, be completely alone. And there is some magical process that's probably going on in your brain. I don't know exactly what it is, but you come back and the answer is just sitting there waiting practically on your desk.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And one thing, we recently moved a couple weeks ago to a new place, and it's a little bit bigger. And so I've had the opportunity to unpack boxes and, buy furniture that we didn't really need before, just trying to make it more of a home. And I've been using it as a really great opportunity to be productive and to feel productive, but not be in front of a screen, you know? Mm-hmm. And so sometimes I'll even save tasks for myself. You know, I'll be like, okay, I'm going to wait till the evening to put together this shelf because I'm going to need a moment to just be away from my computer. You know, I kind of plan around it. So it's ended up being such that I think about every day there's one little home activity thing that I can do, whether it's cleaning or cooking or assembly or moving or something, you know, something mm-hmm. with the home that allows me to, because I'm not really a hobby person. I don't really do hobbies because mm-hmm. it just feels no judgment on people who do. I know people get really into their hobbies, but it just feels why, you know, why, for what? But when I put a shelf together, it's I'm going to use this for books. You know what I mean? It feels very purposeful. So home activities has been my way of carving out that space away from the screen, but also feeling okay, I'm not, I'm doing something productive and I'm getting things done.
Something I would recommend to anybody who doesn't really have that, I'm going to step away from my computer and do this thing, is something that started helping me was the Pomodoro technique, which if you're not familiar with that, is it's basically a time management thing where you set your timer for work, for, I don't know, 25 minutes, 30 minutes or whatever. And then when the timer goes off, you take an allotted break for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, just so you're not doing the thing that you've been doing for the last 30 minutes.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great one.
My advice is to implement that if you don't have a thing that you use for your cleaner, I guess.
Anyway. Yeah. Oh, you want to hear some really terrible but effective advice?
Yes.
Is and this is what I found out very accidentally, is if you have a really, really crappy office chair that hurts.
I'm sitting in one right now.
Right.
It's literally a rocking chair from the 1800s.
Okay, that sounds awesome.
it does sound awesome. Your back, though.
But yes, if you have a crappy office chair, that can be a really great way to get away from your screen. Because after about an hour, your thighs will hurt and your back will hurt and you will be forced to get up and walk around. And it's so funny because I have a pretty crappy office chair and my back has been hurting for so long. And I just thought, that's life. That's my low expectations for myself. I'm that's just, how life is. Backs hurt. And it got to a point where I was I need to go talk to someone. And soon after that, I went, I spoke at a conference and I was basically, up and down away from any type of chair for 4 or 5 days straight. And magically, my back pain went away. And I was oh my God, it's that freaking chair. And ever since I realized it, I started noticing it, I would sit down and I would go, okay, I'm nearing the one. Oh, there are my thighs. There they go. They're in pain. So there's another great cheap life hack. Get a crappy chair. After about an hour, everything will hurt. You'll be forced to go do some jumping jacks for about 5-10 minutes. And there's your digital Sabbath. There you go.
Wow. Or in Charles's case, probably a haunted office chair. Yeah, that's excellent advice. I've never really noticed that. Now I'm going to.
What's funny is I actually didn't even notice it, but I do. I never used to get up and go on walks before, or spend as much of the day standing as I do, and actually, completely and totally oblivious to it. But I think I think I realized I can attribute a lot of that to the terribly uncomfortable chair in which I sit day to day.
Yeah, right, I have this awesome habit of sitting cross-legged, which apparently is a very, very bad idea. My physical therapist told me. So I make it work for myself. So if you don't feel like you have enough screen time, just sit cross-legged, and that will accelerate the pain process.
There we go. As you said that, I am currently sitting cross-legged in my desk chair. That's just how I sit in chairs. My legs are too short to reach the floor.
I just find it so comfortable. I don't know. And I'm so happy to hear that you also do this, because I'm like, am I just weird? Because I love sitting cross-legged. It makes me really, it's just comfortable. It makes me really happy.
No, I agree with that 100%. That's how I sit in all chairs.
Yeah, same.
I can do one leg.
Only one, man. You need to work on that.
Rookie move. So that's going to be the end of our podcast. Again, thank you, Saran, for coming on and having this awesome conversation about mentoring. Definitely check out the website, codenewbie.org. We are the front side. We build software that you can stake your future on. Hit us up if you're looking for help building your next big thing. And also hit us up on Twitter. Hit Charles, myself, Frontside, Sharon on Twitter.
Thank you so much for having me. This is awesome. This is fun.
Yeah, and I also want to give another thanks to Mandy, our producer, for producing this lovely episode and all of our episodes. If you have any questions for us, hit us up on Twitter. Any ideas for future topics, any thoughts you have on this great conversation, let us know. And we'll talk to y'all later.